Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
A black hole?
This side.
A black hole?
Ours. I don't have control.
Yes, it is. A black hole.
Black holes. You know, why are they so fascinating to the average person? I mean, they are dark, massive, mysterious. These are objects in space where gravity is so intense, not even light can escape. Anything that falls in disappears. But where does it go? No one knows. Well, what if I fell into a black hole? Would I be stretched and crushed? Would I come out somewhere else? Today, we're going deep inside black holes and even deeper into the cosmic questions of the universe. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm your host, Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up. Show that takes you deep into the cosmos or just to the telescope in your backyard to learn more about what makes this amazing universe of ours so great. My guest today is astrophysicist, cosmologist, and author of Black Hole Survivor Guide, Jana Levin. Man, people are definitely fascinated by black holes. I mean, like, when I give public talks, questions about them are so frequent. And when I hear them, part of me is like, really? Black holes? That's what you want to know about? I mean, I just talked about the rings of Saturn or swirling galaxies, but you want to know about black holes? I don't know. I guess they're cool. And my reaction is because there's only so much we can say about black holes. Scientifically, that is. Let's take the supermassive black hole at the center of our Milky Way galaxy. It's called Sagittarius A star, and it is an object with the mass of 4 million suns. So take our sun that you see every day, cram 4 million of them together, and whammo! Yeah, I mean, we can see how big it is, how far it is, its gravitational reach. But what's going on inside a black hole?
Hi, I'm Jana Levin. I'm a professor of physics and astronomy at Barnard College of Columbia University. And my research is mostly around the early universe, black holes, the Big Bang, the large-scale structure of space-time.
Well, Jana, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So you write, think, and study a lot about black holes, and I know the public has this unusual attraction for these mysterious objects. What makes them so fascinating to you?
It's interesting. I take it for granted that black holes are fascinating. And so when somebody asked me that question again recently, and I thought, oh, gosh, isn't it fascinating to everyone? But I have to say there is this extraordinary aspect to black holes that is sometimes overlooked. Of course, all of the fascinating aspects of what they do to space and time, just the mystery of how dense or small, compact, powerful they are. But there's really something else that stands out to me, and that is that black holes have this kind of fundamental character, which is unlike anything else in the universe. It's as though they are almost like fundamental particles in the same way that, say, an electron might be a fundamental particle. And I think that they literally are probably made in the Big Bang because they're so fundamental to our understanding of the universe. And there's really nothing else macroscopic that you can think of that's like that at all.
Well, so they're still wrapped in mystery to me a little bit. So what is a black hole?
Where to begin?
Are black holes objects, you know, that take up physical space? Are they rips in space and time? Are they holes? Yeah. Or are they all the above?
Yeah, we use a lot of terminology to describe black holes, singularities, rips in space-time. But what I want to really press right from the beginning, as in a sense, black holes aren't objects at all. They're really places. They are locations in space-time where this occurs, but there's no matter there. There's no material. There's no thing. And anything else about the black hole, whether it has a singularity, whether it's a rip in space-time, all of these other aspects aren't relevant. All that really matters is this space-time feature that we call the event horizon. Now you're going to ask me what's an event horizon.
Oh, I was going to start down a line of questioning whose answers will always probably end up being no one really knows. But the event horizon is kind of the edge of the black hole in a sense. But what happens when you fall into one?
Yeah, so as a star collapses, it is not a black hole. It is shining bright. And when it runs out of fuel and it begins to collapse under its own weight, eventually, it does become a really dense object, spectacularly dense, dense to states of matter that are incomprehensible to us, even in laboratory physics, and eventually gets so dense that the event horizon forms, a region, famously, beyond which not even light can escape. And that includes the light from the star. The whole system goes dark. The star itself continues to collapse, and the event horizon is left empty. And that's really wild. So the event horizon is like a fossil record in space-time, marking the region beyond which light will never escape, but there's no material there anymore. And then the star continues to fall. Now, if I were to jump in after the star, what would I find? As the end state of catastrophic gravitational collapse, would I find a singularity, a rip in space-time? And yeah, you're right. You were right from the beginning. You answered your own question. Nobody knows. But if you're a purist, you might say, look, that information is sealed behind the event horizon. It has no effect on the universe out here. I think we're going to find a really complicated story that connects ultimately with the evaporation of the black hole.
Well, in your book, The Black Hole Survivor Guide, you know, you walk us through a lot of this stuff. Can you give us the tips and tricks to getting close but not falling into a black hole? Or do you just recommend just going for it, diving in like Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar?
Right.
It's all black. Charles, do you read me? It's all blackness.
So, you know, the real adventurists got to dive right in. But whether you're choosing to skirt the outside and escape back out and live the rest of your days with the rest of us, or plunging in, you want a big black hole. You want the biggest black hole you can possibly find. Trillions of times the mass of the sun. The bigger black hole, surprisingly, is safer for us. That might be counterintuitive that, oh, a big black hole is really going to be so powerful and it's going to churn up space-time and destroy everything. Actually, if you think about it, the bigger a curved object, the less you notice its curvature. So for instance, I walk around on the surface of the Earth and I don't obviously notice that it's round just by walking on it. But if I try to walk on a basketball, I would absolutely know that it was round. And so the curvature of the smaller object is actually more important. And the black hole is all about the curvature of space-time. So the bigger black hole actually feels kind of straight and flat and smoother, and you won't be tidally torn apart if you go near a very, very, very big black hole. There will be no drama. You will drift across as gently and comfortably as if you had stepped into the shadow of a tree. And you wouldn't even really know that you had made this irreversible decision. And then you'd be inside the black hole and it would be too late. But once you're inside the black hole, the other thing you want to do to survive is you want to prolong the time that you spend falling in. You don't want to take the shortest shot in. And if you worked very hard at a very, very big black hole, you might be able to survive a year like that.
I always thought you just like you have to just keep rotating because, you know, the part that's closest to the black hole is going to get spaghettified. So
right. Well, it's very strange. On the inside of the black hole, the singularity in your point of view no longer looks like it's a point in the center. It actually looks like a point in the future. And so you cannot avoid that singularity the way you can avoid a point in space. It comes at you the way the future comes at you. And so that's why the singularity is absolutely unavoidable. A limitless amount of accelerant and fuel could not allow you to avoid the center forever. You eventually will encounter it.
More looking up right after this.
Support for Cincinnati Public Radio comes from Metro Bus Service, offering a means to connect Hamilton County residents with reliable transportation to and from work and to many leisure activities throughout the Cincinnati area. For more information, visit go-metro.com. Metro, your way to go.
Support for WGUC comes from the Greater Cincinnati Foundation. With a mission to be bold and alongside donors, Greater Cincinnati Foundation has committed to investing $1 billion in the community over the next 10 years. Together, let's shape a Greater Cincinnati that isn't just growing, it's thriving. Visit gcfdn.org to open a fund and join us.
If you're making plans to simplify your surroundings this summer, a great place to start is to donate that vehicle you don't use anymore. It's easy, pickup is free, and we turn the proceeds into great radio. Learn more at WVXU.org, and you could even get a tax deduction in the process.
You know, one of the biggest stories of the decade to me is when astronomers are capturing black holes colliding. How did they do that, and why was this such a huge deal?
Such a big deal. It surprises people to know that we don't take pictures of black holes. At least only twice has it ever happened, and that has been very, very, very recently. What we do is we indirectly detect the effect of the black hole, usually the mayhem it's causing in its environment, and we can deduce, oh, that's a lot of energy, that's a lot of mayhem in a very, very, very tiny space, very massive object, and what else could it be but a black hole? That's usually what we mean. We can't take an image of it. So the first time there was what we would say a more direct detection, some would argue, of black holes also involved Kip Thorne and the great Ray Wise, who recently passed away.
The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences has decided to award the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physics with one half to Rainer Wise and the other half jointly to Barry C. Barish and Kip S. Thorne for decisive contributions to the LIGO detector and the observation of gravitational waves.
The idea was, look, take two black holes that have no material around them. They are completely dark. You are never going to take a picture of that system. But if they're orbiting each other, just as we orbit the sun and the sun orbits the center of the galaxy, they will churn up space-time like mallets banging on a drum. Their incredible concentrations and their motions will cause space-time literally to ring. And 100 years later, after spending 50 years building one of the most sensitive instruments humanity has ever devised, they recorded the shape of space-time ringing here on Earth from the collision of two black holes orbiting, merging, banging on space-time well over a billion years ago. And so you could say that this was real evidence of bare black holes with no light around it. It was the most powerful event human beings had detected since the detection of the Big Bang itself. And none of it came out as light. All of it came out in this banging of space-time.
So you talked about with the merger of black holes that it kind of had a sound like a ringing drum. What does a black hole sound like? Does sound come out?
Yeah, so it doesn't come from the interior of the black hole, but it's like the mallets on the drum. The drum makes the sound. The black holes are the mallets banging on the drum. And it sounds really funny. The way we describe the collision of two black holes is as a chirp. It sounds like this little like brrrr. And it sounds that way where it scoops up in frequency like that because the black holes are getting faster in their final orbits before they merge and make one bigger black hole. It's so fast that your ear can't actually interpret. It also can't hear. It's too low amplitude. But that is aided by slowing it down in our techniques and our technologies. But theoretically, it's conceivable that if you were floating in empty space, even without air, around two colliding black holes, that the squeezing and stretching of shape, which is what the gravitational waves are, they're a deformation in the shape of space. So the squeezing and stretching of the space, the wringing of the space from the merger of these two black holes, could actually excite your ear mechanism. And you would literally hear it, even in the absence of air.
This is why I always tell people at parties, find the cosmologists and hang out with them because they will like expand your mind. Yeah. This has been so awesome. Thanks so much for taking the time and expanding my mind and the universe.
Thanks, Dean. Really fun to talk.
Cosmologists like Jan 11 definitely think some deep thoughts. I picture them just sitting around, sipping herbal tea, stroking their chins, and pondering the vastness of the universe. They're like, yeah, what about if we're all just living inside a black hole right now? You know, stuff like that. One example Jana definitely does think about a lot is the whole universe. Like, is the universe truly infinite? Does it go on forever, encompass everything? Or is it finite? Does it have a certain size and actual edges? And we hear all the time that the universe is getting bigger. It's expanding. One of my favorite conversations that illustrates the tone of cosmology goes something like this. I asked the cosmologist, is the universe infinite? Cosmologist replies, yes. So it goes on forever.
Yes.
And the universe is essentially everything.
Yes.
But is it getting bigger?
Yes.
But it already was infinite.
Yes.
But how does infinity get bigger? Pause. And then they reply,
yes.
Looking Up with Dean Regas is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds and I created the podcast in 2017. Ella Rowan and Carlos Lopez Cornu produce and edit our show and dream of a parallel universe where podcast producers are supreme rulers of entire planets. Janelle Walton is our vice president of content, and Ronnie Salerno is our digital platforms manager. Our theme song is Possible Light by Ziv Moran. Our social media coordinator is Hannah McFarlane, and our cover art is by Nicole Tiffany. I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.
Sources and Methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.